In this episode of Balancing the Christian Life, I talk about working through hardship. Welcome to Balancing the Christian Life. I'm Dr. Kenny Embry. Join me as we discover how to be better Christians and people in the digital age. So there's this little part under my nose I just have problems with. I use an old-fashioned double-edged razor to shave and have now for about a decade, maybe more. The way I shave is something I've grown to appreciate. It's a morning ritual that involves a series of choices I have frankly come to love. I have several shaving soaps, all with different scents. My wife, Katie, thinks I have too many, but I assure her that's simply not possible. There's no such thing as too much shaving soap. The soaps have names that sometimes describe the smell and sometimes not. Future Fiction, for example, has a strong citrus and musk smell. It's bright, and the name tells you absolutely nothing. However, coconut and lime leaves no doubt what the soap maker was trying to accomplish. This morning, I'm using Gatlinburg. It was a scent I didn't really like at all a few weeks ago, but it's becoming my favorite. It smells like cedar and moss, fall leaves, and other earthy smells. It reminds me of going on camping trips in the fall when I was in college. Today, I'm using my old 1959 Gillette Fat Boy, which was refurbished and replated, so it works better than new. In the back of my mind, I know I can't be the first person to use this razor. I don't know its history, only that it has one. I also know it's survived longer than I've been alive. And this morning, this little razor is helping me do something men have been doing for centuries: get hair off my face. I shave every day, unless there's some compelling reason not to. Beginning to end, it's a process that takes me about 20 minutes. But it's time I use to slow down, focus on a simple process, make a series of choices, which all help start my day on a good note or a bad one. And there's that little place where my nose ends and my upper lip begins that just loves to find the edge of my blade and gets a little nick. I've learned from experience to be very careful on that part of my facial geography. I didn't do too well with that little part a couple of days ago, and I've been nursing it, trying to get it to keep from bleeding. I didn't do too well today either, so I'll have to go back and try again tomorrow. You may have noticed I've been absent from podcasting for a couple of weeks. That isn't precisely because I've had bad shaving problems, but a series of other big shifts at my workplace. I've told you a few times, my job has become more demanding. We've known for a while big changes were going to have to come, and about a week ago, they did. Over 100 people I work with lost their jobs. 4 people on my floor alone. I still have my job, and I'm grateful for that. But I've also lost good friends in the process. And I suspect I have a little survivor's guilt. And I've been a little overwhelmed by the pieces we've had to pick up as we said goodbye to so many so quickly. The man who oversaw the radio station was one of those guys we had to let go. I had to go into his office to figure out parts of the radio station, and it felt like a funeral. Most of his stuff was still there, but he wasn't, and he wasn't coming back. I think I know the reasons most people were let go. These were difficult but necessary decisions, and I don't envy the people who had to make them. I don't agree with the people they chose to let go, but I'm not sure I would have let anybody go. This was a choice that had to be made if we wanted to keep the university going. Christianity is filled with tough decisions. Notice I didn't say hard ones. We often know the right answers. We just have a hard time with follow-through. Job knew the right answer about who he should trust when he lost everything. He knew God was in control. He knew God was all-powerful, but also perfectly just. But that didn't make Job's life any easier. His life was tough and kept getting tougher. I don't have Job's life, and I'm grateful for that. But I also know my life has had several speed bumps lately. Let me tell you four things I've learned, or maybe just relearned. When life starts speeding up, slow down. Job and his friends sat for 7 days, saying nothing after a series of calamities that would have devastated anybody. At the moment Jesus was betrayed, he was praying in a garden. Daniel didn't run or freak out when he understood people wanted to kill him. Instead, he simply prayed in the same way he always had. Ezekiel went to where the Israelite exiles were and sat at the river Kibar for 7 days. All of these men were in the middle of an emergency or catastrophe, and yet all of them slowed themselves down and thought. That's not easy, because when people around you are anxious or worried, you want to join in. I remember the first time I used a double-edged razor. My wife, Katie, was worried I would cut my head off. Seriously, you think I'm going to kill myself with a razor people have been using for almost a century? Have you heard a lot about safety razor decapitations? Well, no. But as I used the razor for the first time, I managed to nick myself in a few places. When you're going from a cartridge razor with 2, 3, 4 more blades, you have to unlearn some of the things you've been doing for a long time, and that's not intuitive. With a cartridge razor, you have to press the cartridge down so it meets the skin. With a double-edged razor, the blade is already in contact with the skin. So the lighter the touch, the more effective it is. You put no pressure on the blade at all, but instead let the weight of the razor do all the work. It is far simpler and easier when you understand how to do it. But on my first time, I remember freaking out because I had little nicks. After a while, you figure out these little cuts are just that. Little. They take a few minutes to heal, but after a while, you begin to understand the process and the reasons behind the actions. Paul tells the Philippians what to do with this anxiety. He says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Anxiety is often a product of urgency, but not necessarily importance. What's important? What's really important? That's not always easy to figure out, because what's important often doesn't correspond to what I love or what I want to have happen. So when you feel the urgent need to act quickly in a time of high anxiety, sometimes the best course of action is to slow down. Something else I figured out was the importance of finding places to help. One of the guys who was let go messaged me. He wanted me to make sure his interns were taken care of. Let me say that again. At a point where he had just lost his job, where he didn't know if he was getting another paycheck, where his future was completely up in the air, he asked me to take care of his students. Who does that? In my crisis communication class, we talk about how crisis events are times when heroes are born. But one of the ironies of that is those same heroes never see themselves that way. If you have the opportunity, talk to someone who has fought in a war and ask him if he's a hero. Without talking to your friend, let me tell you what he's going to say. No, he isn't a hero. He served with heroes, but the real heroes are the ones who sacrificed their lives, who didn't go home, who lost everything. I'm inclined to believe him, except I suspect even those your friend is talking about wouldn't even identify themselves as heroes either. My buddy John doesn't want me to look up to him. But that's not going to stop me, and it shouldn't stop you either. John is a hero because he decided what he was going to do as one of the very last things he could was take care of others. Jesus came to a world where he knew a good chunk of the people would hate him. And let's be clear, not everyone did. It's easy to generalize, but you can't count Mary in that group, nor John, nor Peter, nor hundreds or thousands who loved Jesus deeply. I'd be willing to say the people who loved Jesus most were the ones Jesus helped most. Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus help in the burial of Jesus. Even on the cross, we hear Jesus hand over the care of his mother to John. When he was dying, he helped his mom. Yes, I know the people who loved him were in the minority, but there were people who imperfectly loved him, even at the end. For the last couple of weeks, one of the few joys I've found is finding ways I could help people around me. No, I'm not like others who do this better, but it's been nice to help some students navigate a list of classes that have changed or come to grips with a professor they love who is no longer going to be here. I've helped a couple of others get podcasts up and going, which is awfully gratifying. I've also been able to help my son understand Christianity a little better. He just started attending the school where I teach. We've set up a microphone and a couple of times where Jake asks a question and we talk about the answer for about 15 minutes. That is a really cool thing and something I love doing as a dad. The third thing that I relearned during this entire ordeal is the importance of sharing what hurts. I've been in several meetings where we've been taking the tasks left behind by those who have been let go and dividing them among those of us who are left behind. But every time we do this, there's someone who wants and needs to talk about the pain all of us feel. I can't really add much to what they're saying. What's going on isn't fair, and there's no point in pretending like it is. I've had dozens of conversations with friends where all we do is talk about what isn't fair and asking questions about how to proceed from here and what the future looks like. Processing grief isn't what any of us want to do, but it's what we all need. Christians need each other in times like this. We both need to share and listen. The men on the road to Emmaus needed to tell the story of how Jesus was killed because they were still processing what they saw. Jordan Peterson tells us there is really no difference between speaking and thinking, and talking things out is something many of us need in order to get through the steps of grief too many of us try to navigate alone. For the past couple of weeks, I've been having those conversations. A few friends have checked in on me, like Hal Hammonds, Edwin Crozier, Josh Creel, and Chris Emerson. Sometimes they don't have much to share or much to help, but just knowing they're there is sometimes enough. I must admit, sometimes I end up having entire conversations with people I know aren't in the room. I've had a conversation with my boss about why some things were obviously not fair and why they should have gone a different way. It's part of my ritual of sorting through my thoughts and processing the parts I still need to think through more carefully. Listening with others and helping them think through their grief. Rituals like the Lord's Supper are called memorials because they remind us what we need to process more than once. When Jesus gave us this memorial, he simply said, "Do this in remembrance of me." As Christians, there's a way we can't do that. Jesus lived in a time we did not, in a place most of us do not, In circumstances, we cannot. So is he asking us to do the impossible? Or is he just asking his apostles to do this? No, I don't think so. I think he's asking us to remember what his death means to us and to process the cost of our relationship over and over. Remember him. Remember what this cost. And remember what this costs us. God knows I'm hurting. Finally, in times like this, my prayers become conversations with God about what I just don't like. I've been editing a conversation with Edwin Crozier and Andrew Roberts about studying the Psalms. And what I've noticed is how we don't often do much with the Psalms that talk about judgment or revenge. We often gravitate to Psalms which have positive, inspirational, and uplifting messages. But some Psalms just aren't that way. God knows I'm hurting. And that's important for me to remember. God understands pain. And even in those times, especially in those times, God knows and cares. That little place between my nose and upper lip is one of those places I don't think about a lot until it's bleeding. Then suddenly, it gets a lot of attention. It doesn't mean it will stop bleeding quickly, but it does mean I know what hurts. And what I'm doing is to fix the problem, even if it involves more pain. I have to confess, my prayer life needs help. But I know at times like this, my prayers are more raw, and I know God hears. He doesn't always fix what I want fixed or in the way I want it fixed. But saying it out loud, talking with friends, then just giving it to God sounds like a ridiculous exercise, but it just works. I know that because I've seen it more times than this. So I'm looking at that little cut. It will get better eventually, but not right now. It will hurt and bleed for a bit, but that's fine. Or at least it will be. So that's what I've been doing for the last couple of weeks. I'm sorry I haven't been able to take you with me, but I think I went where I was needed more. This Sunday, I plan to release the interview with Edwin and Andrew about the Psalms. Yes, it's good. And yes, I know it will help you. They're good guys and good friends. You'll be better because you heard it. But I'm going to ask you for some prayers. Prayers for my friends who lost their jobs, for those of us who are left behind, and for me. Because this is a time I think all of us could use a little more prayer. So until next time, let's be good and do good.